Hello and welcome to the Transcontinental Daily Podcast, episode 8. I'm Tom Prober and we're live from Control Point 4 in Romania's Parang Mountains. There's a bit of a weird theme developing at the control points that I've noticed. CP2 had Christmas decorations and just got to CP4 this afternoon, and there's Easter decorations just behind the signing desk. So not sure what's going on there. Maybe we'll get a Halloween themed finish or something. It's great to be back in the virtual online bar with you guys discussing the race with fellow TCR veterans Karen Tosti and Rob Quirk, who, by the way, have been doing an awesome job of hosting the pod while I've been sort of out in the middle of Eastern Europe with no internet connection. I've listened to them all and it's been absolutely great. So hi guys, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Tom.
We've missed you. Welcome back.
Thank you. And for this episode, I'm delighted to say we've got another special guest for you in the form of two-time TCR winner and genuine ultra cycling royalty. It's James Hayden.
Thank you very much.
Hi, James. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. So last time I was on the Daily Pod, which was literally just a few days ago, we were back at Control Point 2, and today the race leaders have come through Control Point 4, and it's all going so fast. These guys are ripping through Europe, and none of us can believe how fast it's sort of all unfolding. So in this episode, we're going to focus on that drama of this really tight race that's developing at the front. And we'll be picking James's brains to get his insights into what it's actually like to be competing at the very front of these races. So yesterday, Control Point 2 closed in Italy, and we had all that drama of people just missing out and just getting in. Last night, Control Point 4 opened as our three race leaders have made it into the Parang Mountains, which is a ridge in the southern Carpathian Mountains in Romania. The front three came through Control Point 4 just a couple of hours ago, really. And we literally only just managed to catch them coming in the support car. Like, we were struggling to get to them, and we only just caught them up at, because they were doing the climb that you have to do before you get to the CP. So they're seriously fast. And right now, having gone through the control point, they're now on the parkour, which is this much anticipated gravel section of what's called the Drumul Strategic, which is off the Transalpina Highway, which is Romania's highest paved road. So we'll talk a bit about more about that, about the control point and the parkour in a bit. But let's just get a quick summary of what's been happening in that kind of battle at the front of the race. And we'll share this around and get all your thoughts. But Rob, if you could sort of give us the lay of the land, and then you guys can jump in and add bits and bobs as and when you fancy.
Yes, thanks, Tom. Well, as we've been seeing, it's been quite hot, or the race has been heating up quite a bit since Control Point 3. We've got the same three riders on the front, Christoph, Adam and Ulrich, all vying for first place. And to be honest, it's anyone's guess who really is going to be out front, because they are so close together. Just when one stops to refuel or anything like that, they're leapfrogging the whole way. Christoph seems to have made his move overnight, taking a much shorter sleep than usual, so to overtake Adam and Ulrich. And he was first into Control Point 4, followed by Ulrich and then Adam. So when we left it yesterday, Adam was very much at the front of that pack. But as you can see, they're just swapping around all the time. There has been delays on the tracking, so it's been difficult to see if you're watching the dots at home who's been first and second. But yes, it was Christoph, Ulrich, then Adam. They're currently on the parkours. Tom, I mean, you've been following this on the ground. It must have been pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was very, very exciting. We were following them up the climb that they do. to get kind of up and over and then down to the control point. So, I mean, yeah, can talk about that in a bit, but I'm really keen to get James's views on this, really. I mean, what have you made of this, James?
Can I just ask, I'm looking at the tracker at the moment, and Ulrich's tracker is sort of static at the checkpoint. Has he left? So are they all up on the far corner?
He has left. Yeah, he has left. I think he was having tracker problems. He didn't want to swap his tracker, but that must be what's going on. But yeah, he definitely left.
Okay.
So hopefully that in and around them.
Because it'd be good to kind of see where they all are together, really. Because Christoph and Adam had sort of been like crisscrossing on the parkour a bit. Now it seems like, I'm looking at it live, Christoph's actually taking a bit of a lead on Adam. And I know that Christoph actually went and pre-rode this this parkour and knew what to expect. And I've kind of spoken with a bunch of sources, and I know that it's pretty rough, and there's some hiker bike, and it's not like it's probably one of the worst sections that TCR's ever routed along, is the understanding that I have.
Have you ever gone out to scout out a section of a race before?
A race or TCR?
any race.
Yeah, TCR, no. When I was doing it, I didn't really see any need, because you could get pretty good intel from like just a map or speaking with people, and perhaps things weren't so... TCR has been putting rougher and rougher stuff in, which makes checking stuff more and more useful. But when I first went to Kyrgyzstan for a Silkway Mountain race, I went out there a few weeks before. I didn't really scout the route, but I just spent some time out there in the country, like enjoying it and also looking around to get a feel for it, because I'd never been there before or in like such high mountains. And that was quite a useful experience to give me some confidence.
And I mean, the thing that I think stands out about this contest at the front is that we have got these three guys that are so close, and typically you might get one or two who are sort of in a different league to everyone else, and they, you know, pull out quite a big lead, as you've done before, James. But have you ever been in a race that's been this closely contested and everyone's really pushing the other guys to go probably faster than they wanted to?
Yeah, I have. I don't think you're pushed to go faster than you want to, though. I think you're pushing to go as fast as you can, irregardless. Yeah. When you are in this sort of situation where there's a couple of people really close to you, like you are going to have to find something extra to get in front of them. But I also do sort of wonder if there is this kind of situation here where it's a bit neutralized in some ways as well, because they know these like ferries are coming up, and maybe rather than really like trying to attack each other, and it seems like Christoph Strasser might have some legs, because he pulled a huge gap back on Adam and Ulrich, that he might be holding back a bit to save some legs for the other side of the ferry, depending on if they all cross together or something like this. So I wonder if there is a bit of cat and mouse going on there. And I know Ulrich has experience of getting ferries and racing to the finish from Two Volcano Sprint when they finished on Sicily. And there was, I think it was 150, 60 kilometer stretch there, perhaps a bit more. And they had to race up Etna. So I know he will have some understanding on this situation. So I do wonder if they're not all going flat out at the moment, or if there's a bit of caginess going on, a consideration of others around you.
Interesting.
What I'm saying is, I think this ferry is affecting perhaps what might be going on, and we might have seen things a bit differently if that wasn't there.
Karen and Rob, have you got any sort of burning questions that you've been
I was actually quite interested going back to the whole riding a section of the race beforehand, because I thought Christoph's post, or he was asked, you know, he had already scouted out this part, this parkour. So instantly I thought, oh, he's got the advantage. But then they said, are you looking forward to it? And he was like, absolutely not. So I wondered, do you think scouting gives you an advantage, or maybe it might just make it anxiety? You know, you might be dreading a part. Perhaps you've got some insight on that.
Me?
Yeah. If you've done some scouting, well, you've done a little bit of scouting in Silk Road. Did that make you feel more confident, or did it make you feel...
100%. It's 100% gives you confidence. You know exactly what's coming. You know how to deal with it. You know what to expect. You're more prepared. Perhaps you might not have changed your equipment because you might have been running the same equipment anyway, but you really know what's coming. And I think a good example of this is when we consider events and races like the Highland Trail 550, Tour Divide, Colorado Trail Race, Arizona Trail Race, you know, these fixed route events whereby perhaps you need to do them 2-3 years to just really start to understand them, because you learn where the corners are, where the important resupplies are, you know, the really tough sections, the things that you need to do at daytime, the things that you know, can do at nighttime. And when you sort of have that detailed knowledge, you sort of understand it a bit better to be able to maximize your potential over that. So yeah, I think it's 100% a benefit in doing.
I like the tenacity of returning to a race, which I've never done myself, but you obviously have, James. I guess there's quite a split between people who might finish and be like, yeah, I've got that in the bag now, I'm happy with that, and people who want to keep coming back and improve upon it.
Yeah, I think exactly that. You just want to improve, don't you?
I guess returning to the TCR is not the same as returning to a fixed route race, though. Mm. Yeah, I guess you have some of the advantages. You kind of know how you ride your race, but you don't have any of the kind of route knowledge advantages.
Yes and no. I would agree with you that it's not the same. There is a benefit in doing TCR before, because, like, if, for example, I've been to Romania, Bosnia, you know, these Eastern European countries, I understand what the roads are like there, the numberings, the systems, what hours the petrol stations might be open, what the food resupply is like, what the locals are like, you know, the currency, the culture. You do get a lot of benefit from all of that as well. So there is definitely a benefit in having done it previously.
Can I ask another question, James? We're just going to be targeting you with questions, since we're lucky to have you here this evening.
it's an ambush.
Yeah. So I guess I'm just really interested. I've got no idea what those guys at the front are really thinking. I think it's so easy. We're here, you know, every evening just looking at dots, trying to deduce from what we see on social media and photos what people are thinking and doing, but really it just feels like this very inhuman effort of these kind of ultra athletes just plowing their way across Europe. But obviously they're people and going through a lot of pain, and I think this isn't a plug for your doc podcast, Tom, but I listened to one earlier on and it really gives you a sense of, oh yeah, these are people who are seriously suffering in the way that everyone else is suffering in the race, but they're just further ahead of everyone. So yeah, I guess, James, I'm just really interested, what's kind of going through your head at this stage of the race when you're in front? Are you really feeling the pain, or is it actually you're just so focused on getting to the end and that's kind of at the forefront of your mind?
The honest answer is it depends. like anything, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
You know, some events, it's very much been, you know, I have an injury by this point and it's really just a struggle, and you're doing your best to get through it and you're going slowly and you're not particularly enjoying it, and you're just trying your best to sort of ignore your injury or the pain and keep moving. Other events, you could feel like $1 million. You don't have any injury. Your energy levels are really good. Things have gone really well. And you're honestly just flying. So it's very hard to say sort of from a distance how each competitor will be feeling at the moment. You know, we know Warwick had this knee injury from the beginning, which has always been a bit strange. And so I'd imagine he's feeling not good. And that's causing him some pain, which is causing him to slow down, and it'll be messing with him a bit. You know, I'm impressed he's continued to push on. Adam doesn't have social media, so he's a modern day hero. So we don't really know how he's feeling, apart from that he looks generally quite fresh at the checkpoints and is pushing a relentless pace. I'd imagine he's really motivated to race, and you know, we haven't heard of him having any issues, so I'd imagine he's feeling really good. And Strasser, we know, has brought back a lot of distance since he stopped getting lost, and we know he's phenomenally strong and he looks good, and I'd imagine he's just driven to really push hard, and I think that once we get across the Danube, he's going to, you know, put it into another gear that we haven't seen so far, and we'll see something else from him, as long as he makes the right ferry and doesn't get lost. But at the same time, if he makes the wrong ferry and it does get lost, that anger or annoyance might you know, give him some energy to push as well. So you can use these things to your benefit as well.
Bringing up Ulrich's knee problem there, it's, well, we've had word out, well, Adam apparently sent this in, that Ulrich has made a makeshift knee brace out on the parkour. So he's obviously really, really suffering here, but doesn't want to give up. I mean, the mind boggles at the determination and that he still has the legs to be in the top three there. But he's having to resort to maybe less than ideal fixes to try and persevere. I mean, it's hard. I'm sure it's hard to know without seeing it. But I mean, do you think Ulrich has the legs?
Interesting. It's interesting reading that. We can't read this and be talking to James without bringing up the neck brace. Yeah. So we'll come back to that in a minute. But I spoke to Ulrich earlier on, and he was saying that his knees really recovered, and you know, he's not anywhere near in as much pain as he was 1 or 2 days ago. So interesting to hear that. So I'm slightly surprised about
delirious
it.
Now.
No, it is possible. It is possible. Like with knees, it's a bit weirder than other things, but it is possible to have a pretty big, you know, something flaring up and annoying you, and for it to go away. I've had this in the past. Knees is more unusual than others, so I don't know. Always take things with a pinch of salt, but it's not impossible.
Maybe Adam's just playing the psychological game, knowing that Ulrich maybe is an avid listener to the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, talking of the psychological game, though, Christoph Strasser is on Instagram, most days saying how great he feels and how he slept so much, and now he's going to start pushing harder, you know? So, I mean, that's the psychological game if you want to play it, really.
Yeah, well, if you're looking for marginal gains when it's this close, then do you use every sort of weapon that you've got available to you? You start playing mind games.
I don't think Ulrich's got the time to be on Instagram reading Christoph Strasser stories.
He's too busy making knee braces.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just on that, obviously we were saying that Ulrich's really suffering probably the most out of these guys, and that sheer determination to carry on you know, is really evident when you start making knee braces out on the middle of the parkour. And like I say, it just puts me in mind of your neck brace kind of solution, James, on TCR. And it'd just be interesting to hear about that kind of mentality of like, where probably a lot of people would just, you know, call it a day at that point, to really invest time in coming up with a solution so that you don't throw away all the work that you've already put into the race.
Very good solution, I'll tell you that. I made it about 150 kilometers after that, you know, so-called solution, and decided to scratch. But you know, it was more because I considered that pain in the neck and the back was probably not a good place to have pain. Although these days I'd be a bit more concerned about having pain in my knees, because I know that these things can go from short-term pains to long-term injuries quite easily, when I was younger, I'd be more inclined to really push myself through something, an event, to finish, to do really well, whereas nowadays I might be more inclined to err on the side of caution in the sense of longevity and come back, you know, be able to come back for multiple events in the future. So there is that consideration. Yeah. Early one thing springs to mind was the second TCR I did, which would be let's say 2016, about 400k from the finish, so it was more than Greece. It would have been whatever we were in before Greece. I sort of must have had a partial tear in my hamstring, and so I was riding with a partial tear in my hamstring for about 400 kilometers, and this was unimaginable. And in the end I was just riding one leg, but you'd got so, or I'd got so close to the finish, you know, it was 10% left, if we're talking 4,000 to 400K, that there was no way I wasn't going to not, you know, not finish. And in that point, you don't really have much choice. And I remember another story of a guy, Alex Jacobson, in Atlas Mountain Race 3 years ago now. His something went wrong with his, did he have saddle sores or knee problems or something? And he couldn't sit down anyway. And he rode for 2 days, basically standing up. So there are stories out there of people doing these things that are not just necessarily at the front, that are, you know, further back.
Yeah.
Perhaps a good point.
Okay, well, let's leave those front three guys for a little bit. We'll maybe come back to them later. But there's
hopefully you can get traffic back working. That's your mission for the night.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, we offered him a tracker at the control, but he was pretty out of it, to be honest. So I'm not even totally sure if he took.
Maybe you should have forced it on him.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, if you haven't got a working tracker, he'd be allowed to keep moving. I don't know.
Yeah. But there's like a little chasing group that's developed behind them, and they are quite far behind. Possibly about 8 hours or so. We've got Paweł Pulawski, Christian Jabukek. This is where we butcher the names again, so please help me out if you know a better pronunciation. Will Vuusden and Marin. And Robin's still
got Robin,
in
Robin
there.
As well.
So Robin, so Robin, who was right up there, well, leading at one stage, and then kind of blew up a little bit, and he had a lot of saddle sore problems, but he's sort of been picked up by that little chasing group, and they've all crossed the Danube now. They're heading across Romania, heading up towards the control. So I don't know if you've got any thoughts about what's happening with those guys. I mean, that's a kind of race within a race, isn't it? I don't think we think that they can catch up with those three.
It's not really a race within a race at this point, I don't think. At this point, they're just all kind of doing their best effort personally and individually.
Yeah,
it's not enough finish for them to be sort of contesting with each other. And I think that'll honestly only happen once they cross the Danube, and then there's a clear run to finish. At this point, yeah, they're just doing the best they can as individuals. They know that front race is probably sort of moving away, but also at this point, this is the point in the race where people do have big issues, and it's possible that any one of those top three could drop out for an issue. Like, you know, we all know Ulrich has his knee problem. Maybe that could go completely, or maybe Adam's hiding something or something else. So there is still the potential for, like, if we're calling it a podium place. So they are just going to be pushing for that completely.
Yeah,
it's in this thing, it's never over till it's over, and that's the thing that everyone sort of perhaps forgets, even when you're, you know, 300K from the finish. It's still a bloody long way.
Yeah.
What I think begs the question, when everything is this close, is, and I'd imagine you would have quite good experience from this, James, is how often do you check the tracker to see what everyone is around you?
I think it depends on people. Like, personally, I just sort of ignore it because it's a bit pointless. If you're going as fast as you can go, then you're going as fast as you can go. And, you know, if you have checked it occasionally, you generally know if people are around you. Like, those front three will know that people's around them. And that's going to ebb and flow as the day sort of passes. So there's no need to be checking it every 5 minutes, because that's a waste of time. Honestly, if I was one of those front three, I wouldn't be wasting a spare second breathing. I'd just be doing everything I could, head down, cranking on. And even on those sort of five group back, or even if we go back to Fiona and that sort of cruising around and looking for a top 10 placing, at this point, this far away from the finish, you just got to crack on with the best pace, I think, and ignore the tracker, because you're still far enough away that you need to race your own race, and you're still far enough away that sort of, you know, anything can happen. So other people are a little bit irrelevant.
Talking of Fiona looking to hunt down a top 10 place, Karen, could you give us the lowdown on what's happening with the women and also with the pairs?
Yeah, so as James just mentioned, Fiona's just a few places further back than that main chasing group that we were talking about. She's currently in round about 14th place. So yeah, just kind of looking to edge into the top 10 really, and successfully annoying the fast, or at least the pretty fast guys, as she'd hoped. So that's really great to see. And then Amrei is still a firm second place woman and Megan third. And when I last checked an hour or so ago, and I think that would still be the same, that would be the case now, they're still the only three women through control point three for the moment. And yeah, there have just been a couple of really nice quotes coming through from both Amrei and Fiona as they've been at control point three, which I think really, I guess we've been talking a lot about, you know, vying for position and that kind of thing, but actually they're also clearly just enjoying the kind of wonder of being in new places that the race enables you to experience. There's something from Amrei saying, you know, I'm really happy about the situation, I can't complain, just here to race the race and I don't want to think too much about positioning, and it's great what everyone's doing. I don't care if I'm second woman, third, fourth, fifth, tenth, anything can happen. I'm excited. I've never been to Romania, Serbia, Bulgaria or Montenegro. So I think it's just really nice to see there's still that kind of wide-eyed interest and excitement and it, about where they are and the countries they'll be going through, even at this stage of the race when they'll be really tired and probably starting to think quite longingly for the finish line. And then, yeah, similarly for Fiona, she says, you know, I don't have any ambitions to come in a certain position, just to see new places. I'm having a great time.
Yeah, but people say that, but they're out racing there. They're racing as hard as they can at the front of the race.
I don't know. Maybe both are possible. But yeah, it's really, I really enjoyed those quotes and kind of makes you think, you know, must be pretty easy out there, right? Just having a bit of a blast. Just some sightseeing, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Fiona, to some extent, there's an element of having to, if you've won the race, you know, and you're coming back to defend it, you have to deal with that in a certain way, don't you? So if you can take the pressure off yourself, then that's probably not a bad strategy to actually be able to perform and not get sort of too tense and too caught up in all the media attention. So I think that seems to have been her attitude from the start, really, to kind of take all expectations off and sort of see what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe it is just a strategy, but maybe that is also generally how she seems to approach these things. From everything I've kind of seen her speak about and read about her, it seems to be, yeah, of course she's going to be quietly competitive as anyone at that place in the race is going to be, but yeah, just also seems to have a really great attitude to it all. But yeah, then just catching up on the pairs. So Stefan and Theo are now through control point three. And it looks like Richard and Samuel...
Still together.
Yeah, against the odds, still together.
After a bit of a wobble.
Yeah. And Richard and Samuel Gates are not yet through control point three, but will probably be there tomorrow. There's probably, unless something goes wrong for Stefan and Theo, there's probably not really a chase between kind of first and second in the pairs competition, but there might be pair 256 A and B who are taking the more coastal route through Croatia, and they're kind of pulling into the picture in third place. So I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see what positions look like as people go through control point three, but I'm quietly hoping for a bit of a jostle between second and third coming into play on the pairs classification.
Great.
And then, yeah, I guess just wrapping up the kind of race positions, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to the GC Lanterne Rouge. So as at control point two, that was Frédéric Roudon, who was the last person to come through control point two yesterday before it closed. And I've been trying to check up on him today to see how he's doing. And I've not been able to find, he doesn't seem to be on social media. So I've not been able to find any evidence of how he's feeling, how the race has been for him, but he seems to be making good progress through Italy towards Bassano del Grappa. So yeah, he seems to be doing well. I think he's overtaken a few places as well. So yeah, I guess there's always the worry that the last person to make it through the control point has done an absolutely epic effort to get there in time, but he seems to have paced it pretty well.
Yeah, that's the risk, like I was talking about last time I was on. I think I've done that where, your focus is on trying to get to that one control point, and you've sort of invested so much of your energy in getting there that the clock doesn't stop, you know. So when you get there, you think you deserve a nice little rest and you maybe need to recover. But the clock's not stopping and that time to get to the next one's always just decreasing. So it just becomes harder and harder to try and catch up. So he's got a job on his hands now to get to that next one.
Yeah. So far, so good, though.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, amazing. Like anyone that gets through these time cutoffs is doing great.
When does CP3 close?
I've got it here. It's 1 a.m. Central European summertime on the 5th of August, according to the website.
So what's that? Oh, there's 4 days.
4 days?
4 days, good, yeah. 4 days. So, all right, I mean, there's plenty of hope for Frederick then.
Yeah, stop for a coffee.
Yeah. He can have that 24-hour sleep now.
Right, so there's two important things really that we wanted to focus on today, and we've kind of touched on them a bit here, but just to round it off, control point four, there's quite an interesting parkour that throws up a few different possibilities and talking points, and then there's the ferries which come after that on the way to the finish, which is going to be a very, very interesting element to the race and could throw up all sorts of strange sort of tactical anomalies happening. So first of all, what do we know about the control point and how it relates to the parkour and the general kind of area?
So the control point, actually, Tom, you can maybe help us out here. I'm assuming the control point is in a hotel, but what I hadn't realized, if I'm being honest, until I'd looked at the route that the riders were going to have to ride today, is that actually the control point is not on the parkour. There's actually a very ridiculous out and back that I'm assuming most riders are going to have routed for themselves, which essentially routes them up Transalpina, which is the highest paved road in Romania, come down off the other side, down to the control point, get your brevet card stamped, and then ride almost all the way back up the climb to the parkour, which is a gravel road that comes off the Transalpina. And I hadn't realised quite how bonkers and cruel, frankly, that parkour is. Am I reading that correctly from looking at the map, Rob? And Tom, even? Or anyone who knows?
Yeah, I think so. I've only seen the start of it. I mean, how Karen described it there is absolutely spot on. It's a very weird sort of layout for a control point and a parkour. And it's sort of typical of other ones that I can remember on sort of recent TCRs, where there is a parkour, but in order to get to that parkour, you have to go over something else, which might as well be the parkour. So there's like almost like secret, sneaky, massive climbs that you have to do, which are sort of snuck in because it's the only way to get to the parkour, which is the thing that you have to do. So in this case, going over the Transalpina one way is a huge climb. Like you say, going down the other side, and this has been a theme of at least CP2 and CP4 this year, is that you have to go down a descent to get there, and both have been really cold. The weather up there today was very, very low cloud, which was full of rain, so it was extremely cold. So, and it was, visibility was almost like less than a meter. And so the guys coming in this afternoon to that control were absolutely soaked through and freezing. So you've got even the descent isn't necessarily easy. And then you've got to, like you say, climb sort of 2/3 of the way back up that climb again to get to where the parkour starts. And then the parkour is all gravel. So it's asking quite a lot of these riders. So that's kind of how it's laid out. And there's a lot of options. You can do the parkour in either direction, and you don't have to do that as an out and back, but I suppose it's the only logical way of doing it. But we'll see if anybody does any interesting routes to get to the control.
Do you have to do the control and then the parkour, or can you do it in any order?
No. You could do the parkour first. Yeah.
So I was looking at the elevation and the. I know you can ride it west to east or east to west, but if you're riding west to east, which is what the three race leaders have been doing today, then you're slowly going downhill basically as you go east. So I'm assuming that's going to be, most people are going to be choosing that route for ease, but also because that's, you're kind of coming from the southwest, so that's going to be the easiest access point. But yeah, I will be very interested to see if anyone's opted for the other direction.
After control point four and the parkour, it's then the run in to the border with Bulgaria, so going sort of southeast, and then on after that to the finish. And one thing that's been getting a lot of attention on social media from TCR vets who have ridden in this area before is these ferry crossings. And James, you've been posting some brilliant analysis of this along with Ingeborg as well. And I know Karen's got experience of these ferries from TCR. Have you as well, Rob? Did you do ferries on yours?
At the finish in Çanakkale in Turkey, there was
a
ferry to the finish, which counted as the finish, but it didn't as well. Yeah, if you know what I mean. It is a funny one, basically. Yeah, so it doesn't play a pivotal role, or it can't play that much of a pivotal role.
Yeah, but these ones might. So if it's all right, James, if you could just give a sort of overview of what the riders are going to face when they reach the river and how these ferries might affect the race, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob said about Çanakkale. I think that was like, it was completely different because, as you said, Rob, the race actually finished at the entrance to the ferry port effectively. Like, all times were taken from there. So the ferry had no bearing on race positions. And it was literally like you got the ferry and you walked 2 minutes to the square where the end was. So it was like, it was, I don't know, it was like nothing. But this ferry is give or take 200, 250 kilometers from the finish. So you cross the Danube just sort of south of Bucharest in Romania into Bulgaria. And there is a bridge at a place called Rusi. But this bridge has been banned. We don't exactly know why. There's not been an official communication on why. It might just be to set up the situation with the ferries, or it might be because it is dangerous, but I don't know. It would be cool to have an answer on that, to be honest, so we can actually understand the psyche of the race. But there are three ferries. I'm going to butcher it. From Zvistov, Tornu, and... where's the other one? Barast or something. Beshet is the other one. And that's from east to west. So there is like one that's obviously closest and one that's obviously furthest away, but the one that's furthest away operates like for the longest duration of the day. And people are going to have to make a decision on which one they want to go for. And this is why I was sort of saying earlier on that actually they might be playing a bit of cat and mouse, and maybe if they all sort of ride near each other or together, then they'll just get on the same ferry and then they'll race from there. And it sort of neutralizes the race a little bit. And once they have completed the parkour, it's a pretty flat ride down to the ferry, so it's not particularly difficult as well. And they don't leave that frequently either. So I've spoken with a few people who are racing, and not actually like the front runners, but some people further back who sort of do take it seriously. And that's an interesting point, that people further back take this seriously as well. And they've worked out what town, like as a junction, they need to decide which route option or ferry that they're going to be heading for when they get to that town. And they've got a bit of paper and some calculations to do that. It's not particularly difficult, but when you're fatigued, you can't be making that sort of decision. You need to have just made it before. So it's hard to say what they're doing up front now, but yeah, it is going to have an effect. How much? I'm not really sure at the moment.
Yeah, I think if I was planning this, the thing that would stress me out or pose a big challenge would be like, how easily available and reliable is this information on when the ferries are going? Because you know, can you actually plan it out accurately, or is there a likelihood you might get there and actually the times are completely different, or like it's really difficult to find those timetables? Seems like it's a difficult thing to research, maybe.
I don't know. I disagree. I found it pretty easily.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know about that one. I don't know. Maybe it's just experience of looking these things up. So
yeah. Okay, well, that won't be a problem for them then.
Well, that's assuming they're running to timetable, because I know so Ingeborg and I also rode TCR in the same year that James won, and I don't think I had any problems with the ferries either.
Did but you take Ingeborg a ferry?
Said, yeah, I took the Beshet ferry. And I remember, I mean, I was, you know, back in the pack. I got there a bit early and was pretty happy to be able to have a sit down for an hour or two. But I don't seem to remember it running. I think I maybe got the last sailing of the day. But Ingeborg has been posting online saying, you know, it's all very well planning to the ferry timetables, but actually, based on my experience, the timetables didn't really mean anything anyway, and it didn't bear any resemblance to what she found when she got to the port. So yeah, could come a cropper even with the best planning. Did you not take ferry then that year, James?
No, I rode to Craiova and then to Vidin, so out of the west of the country, because I think we went down to sort of North Macedonia and into Greece, didn't we? So I think I took a little bit of extra distance just to avoid any sort of issue with it, because I figured it would be quickest.
So what are the possible sort of scenarios then? There could be a scenario where they all end up on the same ferry.
Yeah.
And then you effectively restart the race with sort of however many, how far, like two?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a restart, because I don't know if they really are neutralized or if they're just sort of near each other, but for sure it will have a bit of an effect on your head. You're not going to start smashing to get to the Danube and using a lot of energy when you're a bit uncertain if you're going to get stuck at a ferry. You are going to be saving that energy back for afterwards. So it is definitely going to have that kind of effect. Well, that's what I would be doing anyway. I'd be riding near other people, but I wouldn't be trying to get a lot ahead of them, because it might mess up and then you burn through a lot of energy. So I do think that might be the scenario we see, unless someone has an issue on the parkour, and that might be what Ulrich's having at the moment. I've seen some sort of update on that. So
I guess it depends how big a gap there are between the ferries, right? Do we know that? Because if they're fairly regular, then there's no point trying to maybe get an earlier one to create like a massive gap to the next person. If they were like once a day.
No, it is more frequently than that. One of them's like
ahead of the next person, because then you've got yourself a huge gap.
It is more frequently than that, but it's not super frequently. So there's a reasonable gap. I haven't got the information right in front of me, but I think it is online. Mm.
And I think it's also that the Beshet ferry crossing, which would give you the longest distance, is the first ferry to get going in the morning. So you can essentially take a call, okay, I want to ride more distance, but be on my way across the Danube sooner, or I can ride less distance and have a few hours waiting whilst I'm potentially watching my competitor making headway.
Yeah, of course, that's a good point, because there'll be a gap during the night when they're not running. Yeah. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see where those guys start heading when they reach the end of that parkour and start heading down, because
Yeah, so it's about 250 kilometers from the end of the parkour to the ferry. So reasonably, they're going to be there in the daytime tomorrow. So they're not going to have to worry about the overnight ferry. So they're going to be looking for a daytime ferry. So I don't think they're going to be going for that Beshet ferry. They'll probably be going for one of the other two. So it might be more of a simpler thing. And ultimately, I think they'll probably hang around near each other and sort of then try and be on the same ferry if they can.
Be a great ferry to get onto. See if we can sort that out.
You should do that.
captive interviews.
Hang on. So here you go. Actually, exactly. Dot Watcher have put the ferry times up if anyone wants to see it. But the Shishtov one, which is probably the most direct route, is 8:30, 11:30, 2:30, and 5:30. So it's not that frequent, is it? So you are going to be sort of planning in your head the ferry and maybe saving some energy or spending some energy, but I think they should be able to. They should be able to make the 8:30 ferry, so they should be looking for that sort of thing. Really,
it's great stuff, isn't it? What other sport do you end up listing Eastern European ferry times in great detail. So good. All right, let's rip through the scratch report then. So the most notable scratch is Ian Toe, cap 129, who was previously in the top three and really up there. I spoke to him at CP2 and he was very sort of philosophical about his race, and he was kind of out there to enjoy it and almost felt being at the front was by accident. So he definitely wasn't in the laser focus of like racing. So to some extent, maybe that's not a surprise that he's scratched. I don't know what the circumstances were though. So hopefully he didn't have too much.
He had he blew both of his tubeless tires off and then had lots of punctures on his inner tubes. Man. And because he was riding deep dish carbon wheels, he couldn't find suitable inner tubes.
Great intel, James.
Yeah. Valve extenders.
Well, Adrian Nilsson had a similar sort of irreparable mechanical issue. That's cap 80. He had his electronic shifter broke and just couldn't find a spare part for it. So that's kind of an interesting one for these long distance rides. That
Do you know
electronic
what
shifting, obviously amazing, but I think it was the actual. Something to do with the actual lever itself, like on the hood or the lever or something within that mechanism.
Do you know what brand?
No, I don't. He did tell me, and I can't remember which one it was. Anyway, so then the other ones: Niels Jonty, 175, James Kirk, 162, Craig Edwards, 96, Carl Carini, 94, Adam Popovich, 71, Mark Molloy, 54. What was the story here?
So Mark, we read out his story yesterday from Instagram, where he had a really nice story where he was going to scratch. He went to the train station, the train was cancelled because there'd been a derailment. So then he saw that as his sign to get back into the race. But yeah, he scratched today. So
It was a great story.
Yeah.
What a roller coaster.
let's not spoil that story. And it's a shame you scratched, Mark. And then you got Noah Bo Whitehorn, 178, Jason Smith, 106. What was the story here?
That's another person that we were really excited about yesterday, because against the odds, he had also made control point two after having a collision with a car. So sad to see he's scratched as well. I don't know the story there, if he got lured in by the comforts of control point two too much, or actually if he was more injured from the accident than at first thought. I don't know if you have any insight into that, anyone else.
Nope. No idea.
Who's that? Who's that?
Jason Smith.
Oh, he scratched. Oh, I didn't know that. I saw his jubilant celebration of making, control point two, which was quite obviously a well-deserved celebration. So that's a
shame to see. Yeah. And then finally, we got Andreas Branch, number 83. And then is it Jorge Cordell Lorenzo, 215?
Yeah, it's another right. Oh no.
Sorry, so you've cursed at least three people.
Yeah, sorry. We'll just never mention any any Instagram
any
success feel stories
good.
Again.
Yeah.
Oh no. That's terrible. Yeah, I feel awful now, Tom.
And that rounds up the scratch report. Maybe we'll take this section out. It's not really doing any good for anyone, is it? and no pairs scratched, so all the pairs still intact. At this point, unfortunately, James's recording stopped for unknown reasons, so he doesn't feature for the final part of the podcast. In response to Christian Berkey's question about training for the TCR, James pointed us to a whole section of his website dedicated to sharing his knowledge, and you can go and check that out at jamesmarkhayden.eu/knowledge. And it's really worth a look. He breaks down every element of preparing yourself for an ultra event, including a specific section on James's training philosophy. So as I don't get to thank James in the recording, I'll do it here and say on behalf of the whole team, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your very hard-earned knowledge with the community. It was a real pleasure. Karen, you seem to have sort of made this section your own somehow, or I've just made it yours. So what's happening in the world of social media that we can respond to?
That's hilarious that I'm the social media person, because I'm very inactive on social media. But yeah, so let's go to Cat 54, yeah. Sebastian Nolans. I mean, as a side note, there have been some great clips of him having a lovely time by the Croatian coast, seemingly on holiday. But actually, he's also been posting quite a lot about the effects of the race on his body. So there's a picture of him, I think, from yesterday, pointing out the bags under his eyes. Skin of your belly has rash from always wearing the same clothes, even when you wash them every 2 days. Knees and ass feel worn out. Would be happy with a day of rest. Sun is drying out my face, lips, forearms and knees. But you lose weight, and that's a cool feat, given what you eat during a bike trip.
Any weird ones from you two, from Karen and Rob?
I mean, probably all of those on the list. I did when I did GB Joro, and I was doing that with Francis Cade, and it turned out we had very different ideas of how we wanted to do this race, and I was thinking of like doing long 16-hour days, 17-hour days, and he was thinking like, I'm going to bang out 200k as quickly as possible and edit a video. So then I was chasing his wheel, and like the entire time just being like, oh, I can't keep this pace, Francis. And then at the end of the third day, it looked like I'd had an allergic reaction to cycling or something. Like my whole face was swollen. Like my eyes just looked like, you know, little slits, because all, you know, he's pointing out having bags under his eyes. It literally looked like I'd been stung by a bee or something. And but that was more like I was, you know, like sort of pushing way above my pay grade when it comes to ultra cycling though. So yeah, that was pretty funny. That's on video too, like, you know, so you can go back and look at that.
We'll put the link to that in the description. So yeah, we've kind of gone quite a bit over time because of getting so in depth into this race that's developing. So let's call it a day there for this episode. Thanks so much, James, for coming onto the pod. Really appreciate it, and it's been amazing. It's an absolute pleasure to get your insight on that. And thanks to Karen and Rob as well. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming back.
No problem, Tom. Good to have you back.
Okay, well, the only thing to say is that obviously your questions are so appreciated, and they form such a big part of the pod. We've absolutely loved reading them and answering them. So don't forget to send those in to the usual email address, race@transcontinental.cc, with pod question as the subject. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating and a review, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. This podcast is supported by our race partners, Apadura, Physique, Hutchinson, Kinesis, Komoot, LEM Helmets, and Pedaled. All the music has been created for this series by Joe Skinner.